Sunburst Media Productions. This is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host, Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
You want the truth? You should seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of. You.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. This is the end of the meeting. It's the beginning of the movement. Thank you.
Yeah. Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 16th of December, 2013. I'm your host, Mark Skogman. Let's get right to the program preview. On tonight's program, we're going to have a varied program with a little bit more music than we normally have on this program. You know, the closer we get to Christmas, the more we do a little bit more of music. And, of course, we have our strange holiday alternative Christmas music. More about that in a moment. But first, segment one is going to be an interview live in studio with Gordon Chernecki. He is the principal of the Shield Insurance Company, a Florida corporation, correct?
Correct.
And we're going to be speaking about the flood insurance crisis as it relates to the Biggert Waters bill that came from Congress. So that's going to be interesting. Another segment. After that, I promised on this program last week that I was going to play Santa Doesn't Cop Out on Dope. Well, I have it ready for you this week. So, after our serious interview with Gordon Chernecki, we're going to have Santa Doesn't Cop Out on Dope by Martin Mull. A couple of minutes of comedic music, shall we say. Then, in the second half of the program, I've just got into the Spectrum 360 music library today, a new CD from the School of America's Watch called Sing It Down, Volume 2. And we're going to play a song from that. It's a very special song called One by One by Emma's Revolution. That's a great song. After that, we're going to have another local segment. It's going to be an interview live via telephone with Marie Nelson. She's the principal of the Time Bank here in the Tampa Bay area. She's going to get us familiar with the concept of time banking, what that is. And then after that, we're going to wrap up with the fifth segment of the program. We're going to back to the School of America's Watch, to the Trans-Pacific Partnership workshop. We're going to have another segment. This is an important topic. We're going to keep on it. For the next several programs, we're going to have approximately a five-minute segment each program where we continue this teaching on what the Trans-Pacific Partnership it is. You need to listen closely to this. It's a very important issue. So that's what's going on in this week's program. Also, next week, we're going to have a lot more Christmas music and some more good politics for you. So stay tuned next week because we're going to have lots of good politics with that music mixed in and a very interesting mix of alternative Christmas music. Okay, now to segment one. We're going to go to our interview live in studio with Gordon Chernecki, and we're going to be speaking specifically about the flood insurance crisis. It's a national problem, but it has special significance for Pinellas County because it is so affected by this. So it's a national crisis, but it's also a local crisis. And we have a local expert here, Gordon Chernecki with the Shields Insurance Company. And this is a local company. And Gordon is an expert on this. I've heard him speak on this subject already, full disclosure. And he was very good. So that's one of the reasons I brought him on the program. So, Gordon, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Let's get your mic just a little bit closer. There we go. Just try to keep that very close to you. And speak directly into it. Very sensitive microphones, but you got to be dead on to get the best sound. Okay, very good. So tell us, what is happening with flood insurance? Now, we've had this national flood insurance program for many years in the United States. And recently, there were a lot of big changes that have happened to the flood insurance situation as it applies nationally. And there was a bill that was introduced into Congress, which has passed and is now affecting homeowners and the insurance industry, called the Biggert Waters Act. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Tell us what happened with that.
Well, that bill was basically set forth to balance the budget of FEMA. FEMA was about $20 billion in the red. And Congresswoman Biggert was the head of the Finance Committee, and she decided to try to balance it as quickly as possible. And there's been a lot of negative ramifications as a result of the legislation, meaning people who pay, say, $1,000 now when they go to sell their home, the new policy is $10,000. There's a ridiculous gyration in the premiums now as a result.
Now, that's a problem. When you get a premium jump like that, that large, and with that short a period of time, well, basically some people have no notice except they get the they get their bill in the mail, and that's how they find out. That is a problem.
It's a big problem. Generally, the way it works right now, if you took out a policy after July of 2012, you will get that huge jump. Prior to 2012, they will phase in increases at about 20% a year until you hit your maximum ceiling on what the policy would be valued at. But the problem that you have with the flood program is that it was started in 1968. And it was started as a result of many people buying in flood zones because of levees and dredging and just better commuting for people to buy real estate in. So it's a bill that was, or excuse me, it's a policy that's been in effect again since 1968. And now all of a sudden, some very harsh ramifications have come down the pipe. And
very quickly, too. I mean, unbelievable.
It came in a very fast manner. Any kind of industry related to the flood insurance, the flood insurance companies themselves, the independent agents, the realtors, the title companies, they really didn't have any type of lobbying efforts to make any kind of ramifications on the bill that were consumer friendly. Unfortunately, many of the lobbyists that are associated with the bill endorsed the bill, and that turned out to be a big problem here.
Wow, that's really a mouthful. Now, I understand that U.S. Senator Bill Nelson of Florida did introduce a bill to mitigate some of the very negative effects of the Biggert Waters bill, and that he did not have the votes for that. It was not successful, and he couldn't get that passed, and that was just a recent effort, which would have actually helped the situation, but apparently the U.S. Senate is not going to be of help in this situation because the bill did not pass. What's your perspective on that?
Well, it's very disappointing. It's now the old joke. It takes an act of Congress to get this fixed, which is the true essence of this.
And that was good.
And the big issue that we've had, my lobbying efforts that I've had with Congress has always been when it comes to Florida and the insurance issues, whether it's a homeowner's issue, hurricane issue, flood issue, the congressmen and senators from the Midwest and the Mountain West tend not to take a liking towards Florida's insurance needs. So that's a problem that we're going to have right now. And it's becoming a little bit of a Republican and Democratic type of issue now. I understand that the senator from Kansas doesn't want to even let the bill pass a committee. There's a senator from Alabama, unfortunately, that doesn't want it to pass. There's several congressmen and a senator from Texas that don't want to pass. So we're fighting certain ideology on this bill, which is very unfortunate because this bill is a middle-class matter, and that's what's disappointing.
Understood. So now, from what I understand, this affects Pinellas County in a way that it doesn't affect almost any other county in the entire United States, and the fact that we have such a large number of homeowners insurance policies that would be affected by this legislation. So there's a huge concentration of that in this county. And from what I understand, this is the county that's most affected. Out of all the countries in the country, this is the most affected county. And we're talking about nationally, not just in this state. We're talking about in the whole country. Is my understanding that correct?
My understanding is Pinellas County would be the most affected county or primary geographical area affected. From what I have found out, just through reviewing the bill, I noticed that in Northern California, if you were to take a line and geographically take a even distribution of a North and Southern California, Northern California has 48,000 flood policies.
Wow.
We have 55,000 in Pinellas County alone. So you can see why this is a community issue. It's a state issue. In former Congressman Bill Young's congressional district, his congressional district alone, and I'm bringing this up because there's a special election coming down the pipe here, but in his congressional district, there's 38,000 flood policies in one congressional district.
And that congressional district does not even comprise the whole Pinellas County.
Correct.
That's a section of
Correct.
Pinellas County.
Correct.
Wow.
Correct.
So that's a very big problem. I think people that have not been aware of this issue before, now that we're discussing it in these terms, you can see the enormity of the problem and how it's concentrated a huge amount of its effect just in this county. So it's a very large effect. It's widespread. It's very serious, and it's very sudden. So that has all the parameters of a crisis, in my opinion. Now, the flood insurance program itself, I mean, one of the reasons this is happening is because the elevations of people's homes above whatever that is, mean sea level,
mm-hmm.
there are changing definitions of that, which are actually making the situation worse, correct?
That is correct. The biggest problem that you have in Pinellas is that you have older homes which were built prior to the flood map. So basically prior to 1974, that's a term that you see in newspapers called pre-firm. Flood map is a firm. So it's pre-firm, our houses built prior to 1974. Post-firm, they're built after 1974. And the houses were built legally, and people purchased homes legally. And now they're getting outrageous flood bills because they're not built to the very strict standards of 2013. And that's very unfair, many of whom have never had a flood claim, I would like to add. So the bill is very insensitive. It's very intolerant. It is not fair. It's one of the worst bills I've ever seen. I've read the bill. I just think it's just a plain bad bill, the way you want to term it. But that's the problem that we have.
Now, you're talking about Biggert Waters, is
correct.
That correct?
Okay. Correct. The Biggert Waters, it's just a bad bill. St. Petersburg alone has 22,000 homes which are pre-firm.
Unbelievable.
And that's a bad number.
Do you happen to know what percentage of the housing stock in the city that is?
I believe the housing stock in St. Pete, I believe around 25% or so are in a flood zone.
Wow. That's a very large percentage of the homeowners in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one city in a very populous county.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh. I really feel sorry for people that are going to be very seriously affected by this on the coast. Because there have been a couple of fairly recent, over the last few months to several weeks, a couple of forums on this very subject. There was one at the St. Petersburg College, the Seminole campus, that I was able to watch on Pinellas County television, on cable television, which was great. And there was another one recently, too. I can't remember where that was, but there was another flood insurance forum. And these were really, to my knowledge, these were the first efforts in the Pinellas County to start getting the word out, you know, with a public forum where you could discuss this. Now, also, you spoke at a Democratic Executive Committee meeting a couple months ago. I think it was in October, if I remember right. And you addressed the subject then for that group of people. So there's been at least three public airings of this issue. But I think the most large percentage of the public that are going to be affected by this, I haven't even started or begun to educate themselves on this issue. So it's coming at them. They're going to get blindsided by this because they're just not paying attention because there's not enough coverage in the media, although I see that improving because just from the last couple of days, I saw a good article in the Tampa Bay Times about the flood insurance crisis and various aspects of it. So it's starting to pick up attention in the media, but I think there's a lot of people out there that are getting blindsided by this. Are you finding that that's the case as you're working in the insurance field?
Well, there's a lot of people with existing homes in flood zones that are not even aware of it, and the newspaper's starting to get it out word of mouth. We're getting quite a few retirees that pay cash, and then they don't bother to get any flood insurance. And you know, hoping insurance is not a hope and a prayer. And I was just joking with some people earlier today. If you talk to some of the bankers, they'll tell you that many of the retirees are coming in, paying off their mortgages, and are going insurance free, which is very dangerous, no matter where you live, but particularly in Florida. And we were joking around saying, if there were ever a catastrophic hurricane here, a category 2, 3, or 4, you're going to have a lot of retirees living in high school gyms. So that's one problem that this state has from both a homeowner's perspective and a flood insurance perspective. But unfortunately, it's a bill we have to live with, and hopefully we can maybe get some state-run programs that are perhaps are guaranteed by the state to help keep the insurance rates in line. Again, this is a bill from 1968. It seemed to be a very good program. The state of Florida really, I believe the state of Florida pays in 40 or 50% of the total premium for or premium revenue to FEMA, and yet we take out a very little amount of money. And sometimes you get flooding in states that you don't realize have floods. When I speak to the FEMA underwriters, they'll have flooding in Montana and Idaho, and even if, you know, Las Vegas, I think in the last year or two had some flooding. It got 8 inches of rain one day, and it rains out there in the desert. The desert floor turns a rock.
Oh yeah,
it's got to go somewhere. Yeah,
I've seen those kind of things in western states.
Yeah,
they can be very serious. You know, it's bone dry one day, and then it's a huge flood the next.
Right,
and then there's nothing again for months. So how do you prepare for that?
You know, the biggest misconception is that people may get off a flight in Miami and visit the beach there, and then you drive across those wonderful islands where the Miami Heat players live, and LeBron James, and, you know, grant you, it's a great basketball player. I love to watch a guy, but that's an elite type of person, and they live out there right on the water. Again, it's a middle class issue. St. Petersburg, Kansas City, Pinellas Park, Tarpon Springs. I can go on and on of middle class areas where they're hardworking people. I spoke at the Fraternal Order of Police with Alex Inc., and I had their attention completely, in a sense that what happens if these values start to drop? What happens to our revenue in St. Pete, Tarpon Springs, cities like that? What's the first thing that's going to go? It would be overtime to the fire department and the police department, and sooner or later there'd be cutbacks. Right now, you don't want to necessarily alienate yourself out of a flood zone. I believe that no one knew the negative ramifications to this scale, and that something will have to come in sooner or later. I don't think it's ever going to be as good of a deal that we had. You know, now since they took this bill away, we're going to realize that FEMA program worked quite well in the state of Florida.
We are speaking with Gordon Chernecki. He's an insurance expert, and we're talking about the flood insurance crisis. Gordon is with Shield Insurance of Tampa Bay Incorporated. His website is shieldinsuranceinc.com. And his office number is 727-726-4600. Very knowledgeable man. Now, you mentioned that there might be some state-level solutions for this crisis. You know, when I see what's happened with insurance, homeowners insurance that covers sinkholes and a lot of other things, and the situation with Citizens Insurance, that doesn't seem to be a good solution. There seems to be so much corruption in Citizens Insurance now. Well, you see these pay raises for the executives and all these other things. It just seems like they're taking unfair advantage of the taxpayers there in that situation. There's very poor supervision, you know, of the state by that, you know, state-run company. I just, you know, have a pretty poor opinion of the company after all the coverage I've seen about it in the media for the last, you know, the last few years. It just seems to be getting worse and worse. So I don't think there's going to be, at least quickly, there's going to be any kind of real viable solution at the state level, just considering the track record of what's happened ever since the hurricanes, back in 2004 and 2005. And so what's your perspective of that? Do you really think there's going to be a state-level solution for this?
Well, it's the worst thing that's happened to the state of Florida. When I read this bill, it's generally, to put it mildly, it's a financial debacle. Here in the state of Louisiana, are the forefront states that will be hit the hardest financially. And the problem that these state legislators have and the governor is the fact that if you talk to any property appraiser that has these flood zones countywide, they're going to tell you that it's just a matter of time before they will have to drop their valuations. You know, one of the mayors that was just recently elected, I was kidding him, saying, you know, you may not want to be mayor in 2 years if you don't get this Bickert's water bill fixed, because they value your properties tax assessment wise every January. So this problem with the Bickert's water bill is a lagging economic indicator. So it happened. It started on October 1st, 2013. They will tax assess your property values on January 2014. Then you're going to feel this in 2015 and then 2016 if it stays the way it is right now. And that's the problem that you have. Yes, there's people paying cash out there that don't bother to get insurance, but that's certainly not going to support the market.
Yeah, that's not a long-term widespread right. solution for a lot of people. You know, I was just recently I was in downtown Gulfport, and you get onto Gulfport down by the casino there, and right on the shore there, and you see these signs just a few hundred feet from the water's edge, where they show what the Category 1, 2, and 3 storm surges will do to Gulfport. And I tell you, it's if somebody overflows their bathtub in Gulfport, it's going to overflow and flood the town. I mean, they are so low, and there's going to be such, you know, an ingress of water there from even a, you know, a moderate-sized storm. I just think it's unimaginable what's going to happen to the insurance rates, you know, in communities like Gulfport. And then all along the beach communities, that's got to be an absolute disaster. And I know that, you know, from listening to the couple of forums that I've listened to on this previously, you know, legislator and every insurance agent in the area, as they became aware of this, they were just all in shock, just one after the other. They were going bing, 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 you know, just down the line. They're going, what is happening? You know, and you know, a lot. And I know some agents even said that, oh, we couldn't believe this is going to happen. We didn't even take it seriously because it just seemed so ridiculous that we couldn't believe that it would be credible that it would actually happen. And then it did. So we're in trouble here with this. Do you think a Senate bill such as U.S. Senator Bill Nelson put forward in the U.S. Senate, do you think there's any hope for trying that again? Is that a practical solution? Do you think they're going to get anything through the U.S. Senate on this at all?
I am very concerned. I am very concerned about it. The closer we get to an election in 16, the worse this could even be. Not to change the subject, there are some private carriers coming out, but to get it properly done, it's too big of a program because of the risk involved that private carriers never wanted to get involved. And it just seems to be an ideological subject now. And the Tea Party is getting in there. They don't think that they should be involved whatsoever. But yet you have people that did everything right. The houses were built legally. They were built accurately. The buyers qualified for their mortgages with one figure. They went in there with the assumption that their figures for insurance would be whatever. And now all of a sudden there's this new harshness of a bill coming out. And again, a lot of the Midwestern and Mountain West states, they are not very friendly when it comes towards flood insurance or any kind of hurricane insurance. Even though some of these states get a lot of tornadoes, like at Kansas. I mean, the Wizard of Oz was from Kansas, okay?
Yes.
I mean, you see the storms you get out there.
Definitely. And I've seen a certain bias from the states that are in the interior of the country. They really seem to kind of disregard what the problems are of the coastal states. There's definitely a certain difference in perspective depending on the region of the country that you have. Well, Gordon Chernecki with Shield Insurance, I thank you for coming in and speaking with us regarding this important issue. I'm going to be following up with Gordon on future programs so we can keep abreast of this issue for you, because this is very important. Once again, you can contact Shield Insurance at www.shieldinsuranceinc.com. You can email Gordon at shieldinsuranceinc.com. And the office number there is 727-726-4600. And he has an office in Seminole, Florida, right on Park Boulevard for your convenience. Gordon, thanks again for coming.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. We're going to continue on. We're going to try to get our little comedic music in before the break. We're going to go to a break at the bottom of the hour for network news and commercials, and then we'll be back. But first, before that, I got this little treat for you. This is Martin Mull.
Hi, boys and girls. This is your old friend, Martin Mull. And you know what? I just got back from the North Pole. You know what I was doing up there, don't you? That's right, I saw him all right. And all his little dwarves, boy, did I get off on them. I learned so many wonderful things about him. I'd like to sing you a little song, so why don't you, you know, move on up. Come up close and I'll sing to you. Come on, closer. Closer. Come on, I won't bite. Come on, move closer. That's it, right down by my shoes. Great. Okay, huddle all around. I'll sing you a song. All right? You too, Johnny. Come on, closer. All year long he's busy making toys for all the little girls and the little boys. He puts them in his sled and gives his whip a crack. On Donder, on Blitzen, but never on Smack. 'Cause Santa doesn't cop out on dope. Has he ever even tried it? Will you know the answer's no? So little kiddies, here's my point. Just leave him cookies.
Save the joy.
'Cause Santa Claus turns on in his own way. Watching you when I turn on Christmas Day.
Spectrum 360, see you on the other side of the break. Spectrum 360, stay with us.
NBC News Radio, I'm Alyssa Rayberger. The NSA program that gathers phone information on Americans is running into legal problems. A federal judge is ruling that the program appears to violate the Fourth Amendment. Certain soaps that have been marketed as antibacterial are being questioned for their effectiveness and also their safety. The FDA is proposing new rules to make manufacturers back up those claims. NBC's Tom Costello reports one specific ingredient has shown dangerous signs in recent studies.
The concern that liquid soaps, which contain the chemicals triclosan, or triclocarban, may spur drug-resistant bacteria and potentially interfere with normal hormones like estrogen, testosterone, and thyroid functions that could affect normal childhood development and puberty.
An all clear has been given and Harvard University has reopened. Buildings were evacuated after police received an unconfirmed bomb threat this morning. On Wall Street, the Dow jumped 129 points, the S&P climbed 11, and the NASDAQ rose 28. This is NBC News Radio.
Tune in to The Dating Jungle Show every Thursday night at 10 p.m. with your host, Tara Richter, certified dating coach and author of 3 books in the Dating Jungle series, available on Amazon. Join us on a safari through your heart into the wilderness of love as we discuss fun topics such as internet dating, dating after divorce, and how to find the one. Call into the show, get free dating advice from Tara on Thursday nights from 10 to 11 p.m. every week on TAN Talk Radio, 1340 a.m. in Tampa Bay.
You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Prescription Addiction Radio Show, Breaking the Silence. New time, 5 to 7. Drive time, Tuesdays. I am Larry G. Along with Montana, we talk about the topics nobody else is talking about. OxyContin, Vicodin, Xanax, Prozac, Lexapro, Seroquel, Cymbalta, heroin, and even marijuana. You don't know about drugs until you listen to the Prescription Addiction Radio Show. Brought to you by Novus Medical Detox and Suncoast Rehabilitation. Tuesday nights, 5 to 7.
This is Michael, host of the Blind Matters Radio Show. And now we're on 1340 and 1400 on your AM dial every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5. We have a new show that's catered to the low vision, legally blind, and the blind community, people like myself. Tune in, listen, learn, and have fun every Saturday from 3 to 5.
On your drive home Monday evening, listen to Your PC Hero, a brand new time, Monday evening from 5 until 6. Alan Barevi.
Check out our website, yourpchero.com.
And the Shogun.
Alan.
Yes, sir.
I've decided that the world is not big enough for me anymore. I am changing my name to Shogun of Universal World Peace.
Your PC Hero, new time, 5 to 6, Monday evening drive time, here on Tantalk.
You know, for a long time, the saying in Clearwater has been, there's no place to eat in downtown Clearwater. Well, those days are over because Mix Bar and Grill, a brand new restaurant, is here.
Yes, it is. We are at 528 Cleveland Street. That is downtown at the corner of Cleveland Street and Garden Avenue. And we are open from 7 a.m. for breakfast, and we have lunch, dinner, and the restaurant closes at 9 p.m., That includes happy hour from 2 to 7 p.m. We're featuring 2-for-1 drinks and 50-cent swings. Crystal, tell us about the nightclub.
Well, we got a couple nights going on. Wednesday night, we have dollar drinks from 10 p.m. till 3 a.m., free cover all night. And on New Year's Eve, come out December 31st, we're going to be bringing in the New Year together with a free champagne toast.
Yes, dollar drink, absolutely, on Wednesday. It is $1 all night long.
That's absolutely amazing. So at last, we got a place with action in downtown Clearwater.
Thousands of newspaper and magazine articles have been written about him. Countless TV programs have focused on him. Millions of arguments have been started because of him. Everyone has an opinion about him. The world will be listening as Ima speaks. Make sure your radio's tuned, that your alarm is set, as history waits for only one man, the I-Man.
The I-Man is back in Tampa Bay on the stations of the Tantalk Network. Catch Imus in the morning right here.
Tampa Bay's Tantalk. Entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 16th of December, 2013. I'm your host, Mark Skogman. Welcome back. Wasn't the first half of the program good? Very informative. That interview that I did live in the studio here with Gordon Chernecki, that's an exclusive. You don't get a chance to do that very often with a very knowledgeable man like that. Once again, his contact information, website, shieldinsuranceinc.com. And his office telephone number, 727-726-4600. You can also email him at this email address, gordon@shieldinsuranceinc.com. Knowledgeable man. And I thank him for coming on the program and giving us all this good information. Now, I want to go briefly. I did mention early in the program in the preview that I had gotten a new CD into the Spectrum 360 music library today. It was from the School of America's Watch, and it's... A CD, it's a compilation of songs by musicians of the School of America's Watch Music Collective. And that is various musicians. They put a CD together and they release it. And this is volume 2 of Sing It Down. This is a brief liner note from the CD. I'm just going to read this, and I'm going to play one special song by Emma's Revolution. It's One by One. We're going to play that briefly on the program. And then we're going to have, after that, we're going to have Marie Nelson on speaking about time banking, what that is, and how we can use it to our advantage. But first, this is liner notes from the CD Sing It Down, Volume 2. The School of Americas is a U.S. Army military school for Latin American security personnel located at Fort Benning, Georgia. Renamed the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation in 2001, the school has trained assassins, death squad leaders, and human rights abusers for dirty work in Latin America since its founding in 1946. Founded by Father Roy Bourgeois in 1990, the movement to close the SOA seeks to change oppressive U.S. foreign policy as represented by institutions like the SOA through nonviolent action. The movement includes thousands of people from diverse backgrounds working together to create fundamentally different alternatives to institutions of violence and domination. The arts are a tremendously important part of the movement to close the SOA. At the gates of Fort Benning and beyond, art and activism combine to reach people on a different level and to move them to take action. Music in this campaign, as in other social movements, has long served as a vehicle for education, empowerment, and mobilization. This compilation follows in that vein. The task of the SOA Watch is to close the SOA. The task of this compilation CD is to sing it down. Emma's Revolution.
We have come to this place to renounce this disgrace. Brick by brick, wall by wall, we will make this building fall. We have watched
one by one
the SOA,
one by one,
that someone tried.
Okay, that was One by One by Emma's Revolution. That's from the new compilation CD, School of America's Watch, Sing It Down, Volume 2. Great, great song. I find that song extremely moving, and I'm very fond of it, and I hope you enjoyed it as well. Okay, to our next segment. Also, I just want to remind you that we'd like you to like us on Facebook. Spectrum 360 likes our likes on Facebook. Go to Facebook.com. Spectrum 360 radio program, and like this program on Facebook, please. You can leave us messages there. You can contact us there. All kinds of good stuff. Also, remember the podcasts at www.tantalk1340.com. Go to podcasts, go to Spectrum 360, click on the date of the program that you want to listen to. There's 15 of them there already. This is the 16th program with Spectrum 360. And now we're going to our next segment, and we're going to go to a conversation here, a live interview via telephone with Marie Nelson, and the topic is time banking. Marie, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Mark.
Hello. Great to have you on the radio. I've known Marie for a number of years. She's involved in permaculture, and she doesn't say this very often. She's actually a doctor. She's not just an ordinary human being like us mortals. She's a doctor. What do you have a doctorate in? Remind me.
Language education.
Well, there you go. A doctorate in language education. That's got to count for something. But she does a lot more than just that. She's been involved in permaculture, in politics, and especially the time bank. Now, I want to start just by finding out from you what your definition of time banking is. What is it in its most basic concept?
A time bank is a way to create abundance out of scarcity by connecting unused resources with unmet needs.
Wow. That was really an excellent definition. I didn't know if you could state it that succinctly, but boy, you nailed it. That was excellent. Thank you so much for doing that. Yeah, that's the best one-word explanation of what time banking is that I've ever heard. I'm just being honest, that was excellent. Now, expand on that a little bit. How does this work, like on a local level, and exactly what are the nuts and bolts of how you implement this?
Okay, well, I'll talk about our local time bank, which is called Tampa Bay Time.
Yes, please.
And the concept is really quite simple. Members help someone for an hour. They earn an hour of credit for every hour that they work. And then they spend that credit on some kind of services offered by any other member in the time bank and record their exchanges in an online database that you sort of have an account, sort of like in an online banking account. You can check and see, you know, what your balance is.
Yeah, a time bank account instead of a bank account. So this is a way to do non-monetary transactions person to person, and it's basically a modern form of bartering. Would you say that's a good analogy?
Well, actually, we can't call it bartering. It's different from bartering in a couple of ways.
Okay.
Similar, but you're right about that. But it is different in that, first of all, in a time bank, everyone is equal. So your hour, my granddaughter's hour, your doctor's hour, or the professional and the non-professional, everyone's hour is equal to everyone else's hour. So there's no way you can connect it to what you would call the cash economy. There's no way you can say an hour is worth X amount because every hour is worth.
Well, it's no more a democratic. There's no more democratic method of exchange than that I would believe, because every hour, every person's hour is equal, and it's just like one person, one vote. Every person's vote is equal.
Yes, we would hope so. And time banking is really about bringing about a kind of economic democracy, I think. And it's about creating community. In fact, we're really rebuilding the kind of community that many of us vaguely remember from childhood or from the little town where we may have grown up, or we've heard our parents and grandparents talk about what it was like, you know, on the farm or in the old country.
I've had that experience. Yes, absolutely. In my own family, I've had that very experience. I used to live in northern Minnesota in a very isolated area when I was a small child, and there was a way of life there. And not just with the family. We had extended family, of course, but with the whole community. It was very much like that. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And one of my goals is that perhaps if the time bank is successful enough, that we'll sort of work our way out of a job. You know, we won't need the time bank anymore. And actually, we see that happening with some of our members. When people make a new friend and they get to be good friends and they trust each other and they end up doing exchanges back and forth with each other and they don't even bother to record them in the time bank. It just becomes, you know, what you do for your friends. And we think that's exactly where we want things to go. We want to develop trust and reciprocity and friendship across all kinds of boundaries, age, ethnic boundaries, across linguistic borders, people who, may come from different countries. We want to make everyone equal and welcome in the time bank.
You know, it's interesting. that this very station, we broadcast this program from WTAN, and then it's from the WTAN studios, and then it's broadcast actually on WTAN, WZHR, and WDCF. And one of the co-owners of this station, Dave Wagenvoort, has published a book recently called No Cash, No Problem, which is about similar kinds of transactions. It's more about barter than time banking, but it's a very similar concept. So here, you know, these concepts are alive and well right here at this radio station. It's become a pretty popular book. I've got a copy of it, and it's great. And I think time banking takes that one step further, because with internet technology, where you can have an internet database tracking the transactions, it's like an ideal time to introduce this because of information technology, the current state of it. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and there are many, many time banking networks around the world, hundreds, thousands probably. And it's been a little bit slower to catch on in this country. That may be because we've been so affluent that, you know, perhaps people didn't feel the need for these as much as people in some other countries. But when the recession hit, people started getting more and more interested in how do we manage when money isn't flowing, when the banks aren't lending. Even in time banking, it's not just individuals who can join. Organizations, government agencies, faith groups, families, small businesses, nonprofits can join. Any group that uses volunteers. Time banking basically recognizes and rewards the work in what the founder of time banking, Dr. Edgar Kahn, calls the core economy. And the core economy includes things like raising healthy children and revitalizing neighborhoods and making
yes.
democracy work.
Yes, yes.
Building strong families, strengthening the local economy, advancing social justice, protecting the planet. All of those things are things that people spend many hours working on, but they often don't get paid for the work they do. They're not as many paid jobs and certainly not as many high-paying jobs in those areas. And time banking can, if an organization joins a time bank, they can then give all of their members who volunteer, they can pay them in time bank hours. We call them TBT hours, Tampa Bay time hours.
Now, is there a website for this?
Hmm?
Is there a website for this where people can find out more?
Yes. You can go to tampabaytime.org. And we've been growing so rapidly lately and have had so much interest.
Wow,
that we
great.
Haven't done as much with our website as we would like, but we're hoping to beef it up a little bit in the near future.
Well, that's a good problem to have. That's exactly where you want to be with something like that.
Yes, we're having a lot of interest from organizations, and I think that actually the organizations are where the real growth and density, you know, where we can develop the capacity to serve more people instead of signing up individuals, and we are signing up individuals one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But as we work with organizations, then they will sign up their members who want to earn time bank hours. And the way you create this time banking, time bank hours are really a complementary currency. It's a currency that you can earn and you can spend just the way you earn and spend money. And the currency is created by the act of doing the work. So it's unlimited.
Great.
If you're doing,
Great explanation. That's wonderful. That's one of the best explanations of this whole concept that I've ever heard. So you've done really well explaining this, Marie, and I really appreciate that. And we do intend on having Marie back for segments on future programs. Basically, tonight was just a primer, a starter, just so we can get a basic definition of what it is. And we're going to go into this much more in depth in future programs with Marie Nelson. Now, Marie, is there any way that people can get in contact with you personally if they want to contact you directly?
Yes, they can email me at mnelson@nl, as in Nancy Larry, .edu.
Great. Thank you so much. And again, the website is tampabaytime.org. And we will have more from Marie Nelson on future programs. Thank you so much, Marie. That was great. I really appreciate you coming on tonight.
You're quite welcome. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. Okay, very good. Wasn't that a great segment? Another interesting concept and another very intelligent person on this program doing an explanation of a somewhat complex topic and something that's more and more needed all the time. Okay, we're going to back to the School of America's Watch. Last week on this program, we started playing the audio segments of a School of America's Watch workshop that was conducted on Saturday, the 23rd of November at the latest School of America's Watch in Columbus, Georgia. This is another segment of that Trans-Pacific Partnership primer that we've started. We're going to do a short segment on each program for the next several programs about this issue because it's so important. We want people to know what this is. So enjoy, and we'll see you right before the end of the program on the other side.
I understand they wanted to fast track it. I signed a petition last week. I think Gracie.
There are a couple of congresspeople that you know of, and Alan Grayson from Florida is one. It took him 8 months to get permission to actually view a part of this text in this little top secret room that he was pledged to not talk about it. Also, Mark Pocan, a representative from Wisconsin, is one of the leaders opposing this TPP in Congress. He finally has gotten in to see some of it. There's a handful of them that have, but it's not been easy for them, and they aren't supposed to talk about it.
And then Mark actually was taking physical notes, and they took his pen and paper away from him.
Yeah, they called
and
him.
And would not give it back to him.
Who is giving the permission and who is doing the not allowing?
Okay, can we keep moving? And unless you got different information than what we're giving you, otherwise it's just too much. And
the Obama administration get back. And the people involved in the negotiating teams are the ones that are controlling the access to it.
Okay, so the countries involved are Pacific Rim countries. The U.S., and this is our baby. Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. And those countries are in the negotiation process. Because of the timing of when the fast track might hit, other countries can join in later on without any ability to amend or change anything. So if we look at this map in terms of the countries that are involved, from the straight end of trade deals, you know, we're looking at a 26.4 billion in trade with Japan. And so as we go through this, 216.4 billion, that's pretty much the highest, and down to 0.2 billion for Brunei. But we can see there's substantial dollars that exist in current trade. And as we talk about this new law and this new global sovereignty for corporations, we're really reaching toward that $36-plus trillion area. So who's behind it? And Julie responded to that in terms of the Obama administration. But clearly the transnational corporations in terms of what they get out of it. Docking agreements. As I mentioned earlier, there are 11 countries on board right now in the negotiation process.
Plus us.
In fact, there's meetings going on now.
Yes, and Salt Lake City, Utah, there's some top secret negotiations happening right now.
So after the point where it's been taken to our Congress on the fast track, after that point, other countries who join in have to take it as is. But also with a lot of force from the U.S. as into the, you know, our allies in Afghanistan in terms of forcing them to commit to join us in these efforts in the control of foreign aid, the control of World Bank loans in terms of getting as many people involved in this with the exception of, and it's not about China. This is a model for all future trade agreements. Not only in terms of how they are rolling it through Congress, but how much of our life it encompasses.
But also they want this to be the model that will be used for all future trade agreements, and so no future negotiations will really have to take place. It'll just be the package deal that can be moved to start to use this model for other countries. For example, right now the transatlantic free trade agreement is being negotiated. It began back in July, and that's between the United States and the European Union. And this is the same basic models being used as with the TPP. Also, there's a new negotiation. I just heard there was started between the European Union and India. I think this is past month.
Part of the real basis of all of this is what's called the Investor-State Dispute Settlement System, ISDS. And it comes down to foreign corporations being allowed to sue sovereign countries for potential profit loss.
There you have it. There's another section of the workshop on the Trans-Pacific Partnership from the School of America's Watch on Saturday, the 23rd of November, 2013. Very important topic. We're going to keep on this topic on Spectrum 360. You're going to hear a little bit about it on each program so we can keep you updated. This is very important, and we need to be keeping ourselves abreast of this. We're going to have another great Spectrum 360 for you next week. We're going to have four alternative Christmas songs for you. We're going to reprise Martin Mull's Santa Doesn't Cop Out on Dope on that program as well, so you can hear it one more time. Gosh, I love that song. It's just so good. And on the December 30th program, we're hoping to have a year in review with a panel discussion, which we're trying to arrange right now. So we're hoping that that's going to happen soon. So here we go. We're going to have another great Spectrum 360 next week. Remember, stay with us. Spectrum 360.
We can make it happen, yeah.